Good morning and welcome to Catholic Views. I'm Jerry Klein. Thanks for joining us. Today on the program, we're going to have a visit with Dr. Chris Bergwald about some January events that might escape your notice if you don't listen to this interview this morning. So I hope you will. I think you'll find it helpful to your own prayer life and your own opportunities to be a Christian in our world today. So stick around for that. Gene Young will have news for us in just a bit. First, the readings for this Sunday. Michelle Sletten with the first and second reading. Father Darren Schmidt with the gospel.
A reading from the book of the prophet Isaiah. For Zion's sake, I will not be silent. For Jerusalem's sake, I will not be quiet, until her vindication shines forth like the dawn, and her victory like a burning torch. Nations shall behold your vindication, and all the kings your glory. You shall be called by a new name, pronounced by the mouth of the Lord. You shall be a glorious crown in the hand of the Lord, a royal diadem held by your God. No more shall people call you forsaken, or your land desolate, but you shall be called my delight, and your land espoused. For the Lord delights in you, and makes your land his spouse. As a young man marries a virgin, your builder shall marry you. And as a bridegroom rejoices in his bride, so shall your God rejoice in you. The Word of the Lord. A reading from the first letter of St. Paul to the Corinthians. Brothers and sisters, there are different kinds of spiritual gifts, but the same Spirit. There are different forms of service, but the same Lord. There are different workings, but the same God, who produces all of them in every one. To each individual, the manifestation of the Spirit is given for some benefit. To one is given through the Spirit the expression of wisdom, to another the expression of knowledge according to the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, to another gifts of healing by the one Spirit, to another mighty deeds, to another prophecy, to another discernment of spirits, to another varieties of tongues, to another interpretation of tongues. But one and the same Spirit produces all of these, distributing them individually to each person as he wishes. The Word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. There was a wedding at Cana in Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples were also invited to the wedding. When the wine ran short, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, how does your concern affect me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servers, "Do whatever he tells you." Now there were 6 stone water jars there for Jewish ceremonial washings, each holding 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus told them, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Draw some out now and take it to the head waiter." So they took it, and when the head waiter tasted the water that had become wine, without knowing where it came from, although the servers who had drawn the water knew, the head waiter called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves good wine first, and then when people have drunk freely, an inferior one. But you have kept the good wine until now." Jesus did this as the beginning of his signs at Cana in Galilee, and so revealed his glory, and his disciples began to believe in him. The Gospel of the Lord.
And now with a look at news highlights from this past week from the Bishop's Bulletin, here's Gene Young.
Thanks, Jerry. In the news this morning, the 46th annual March for Life in Washington, D.C. was set for this past Friday on the National Mall, and the Diocese of Sioux Falls had a group of pilgrims in the nation's capital to make a statement in support of the culture of life. The Office of Marriage, Family, and Respect Life worked to put together the contingent. This is the seventh year the diocese has coordinated a trip to the March for Life. The group departed from the diocese this past Wednesday following Bishop Paul J. Swain's blessing of the group and their buses. The pilgrimage included participation in the march this past Friday, as well as participation in the Catholic Youth Rally, as well as some free time to visit the sites of the nation's capital. The march commemorates the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in the Roe v. Wade case, which authorized abortion on demand across the nation. For information about the march or other life issues, you can go to www.sfcatholic.org/respectlife. You can also read and see more about the pilgrimage and the March for Life in the January edition of the Bishop's Bulletin in homes across the diocese right now and online at the diocesan website. In other news, just in time for the annual March for Life, an annual poll of Americans' view on abortion shows that 75% want substantial restrictions on abortion access, even as more than half of respondents describe themselves as pro-choice. Conducted by the Marist poll at Marist College in New York State, the survey of 1,066 adults recently revealed that respondents would welcome limits on abortion so that it can be performed only during the first 3 months of pregnancy. Even 61% of pro-choice respondents favored such a restriction. Unsurprisingly, 96% of respondents who identified as pro-life supported such a restriction. Among Republicans, 92% support abortion limits, while 60% of Democrats and 78% of independents shared the same view. What you're getting here is the sense that the debate over abortion, when you look at what people want in terms of restrictions, is in favor of substantial restriction on abortion, said Andrew Walter, Vice President for Communications and Strategic Planning for the Knights of Columbus, during a recent teleconference with reporters. The Knights of Columbus have sponsored the poll since 2008. Migrants from across Honduras set out from San Pedro Sula for the border with Guatemala earlier this month, hoping to reach the U.S. border amid controversies over fortifying the southern frontier with a wall or a barrier. News reports said participants were responding to social media posts promoting the caravan and organizing themselves via WhatsApp messages. The caravan follows the path of a previous mass of migrants who traveled through Guatemala and Mexico last fall to the border city, that is, of Tijuana. That caravan, which was followed by other smaller caravans, captured enormous media attention. U.S. President Donald Trump tweeted his disapproval, calling the mass of migrants an invasion and sending troops to the southern border. Observers said migrants are attracted to caravans because they see security in traveling as a large group. With a look at the news from this past week, I'm Gene Young reporting from the Bishop's Bulletin Newsroom.
Gene, you could hardly have picked a better story to segue into our interview this morning with Dr. Bergwell. So thanks for that, and let's move on to it. This morning on Catholic Views, we welcome Dr. Chris Bergwald back to the microphone. We're going to talk this morning about January events that, as Catholics, we probably ought to be paying some attention to, but that we may not either already have paid attention to or might miss if we don't be a little bit intentional about it. I have three particular things in mind. Chris, you may have additional ones. I'm not sure if you do.
Great.
But let's start with the one that's actually passed. It's already gone by us. And yet I think it's something that that as Catholics, particularly right now in our world, we really need to pay a little attention to this. It's National Migration Week.
Right.
It's something the Church has celebrated in this country for a number of years. Obviously, it's a topic right now that is getting a lot of attention. Some of it not all that great.
Yeah, that's
most
that's
of it. Not
definitely
all that great.
True, and unfortunately, I think Jerry, as is too often the case in our cultural discourse today, there's a lot more heat than light. So I think it's just good to remember what the biblical Christian Catholic perspective is on immigration.
The non-political aspect of this is that there are human lives at stake.
Right. Well, frankly, and I know what you mean by that, but that should be the political aspect too.
Should be.
The question is, and this is where good people, good Catholics even can disagree, is what's the best public policy way to address this? That's beyond my competency and yours, but people...
What?
And yours.
It is beyond me. It is beyond mine. Absolutely.
But I think what the church, when I say the church, what our bishops are always trying to remind us, and what we as you and I as lay Catholics should be reminding one another is, yeah, what you just said, that keep the dignity of the human person in mind as we're trying to figure out all the public policy legal nuances.
The reality, of course, of this issue of migration of immigrants is not, it's certainly highlighted right now in our part right. of the, our part of the world, but this is a global.
Oh, yeah.
This is a global issue, and it has been. And this is what surprises me in the world that we live in today, the advanced world that we supposedly live in today. We still have people who live in such conditions mm-hmm. that they are willing to go on the road for lengthy periods of time, enduring very difficult circumstances in order to get to something better.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, migration, people's moving from one area to the other, has been part of human history since the very beginning. So this is nothing new. And as you said, yeah, the reality is that there is still a third world. There is still abject poverty, and understandably, some people want to escape that and provide something better, not only for themselves and for their families. Again, then you get into the whole, okay, but how do you incorporate, enculturate, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Those are the political dimensions of it. Again, I think that for us as Catholics, what we're called to keep in mind when we're trying to figure out the political solution is, remember, these are about real people.
And I'm guessing, and I don't know the motivation exactly of how this week got started, National Migration Week, in the church, but my hunch is that's what that's about.
Yeah.
Is to help us remember that.
Yeah, just to keep that fundamental principle, the dignity of the human person, at the forefront as we're trying to figure out security and all those real things.
It's not, as I said, isolated to our part of the world. I just saw a comment about Venezuela and the number of refugees leaving the country of Venezuela right now. I'm not sure exactly which countries they're going to.
Right.
I'm guessing the neighboring countries
right.
in South America. It's in the millions
right.
Who are fleeing Venezuela because the conditions have gotten so bad.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is something I think not just, obviously it's easy for us to focus, understandably, on the American United States immigration debate, but as you just said, illustrated, this is a reality going on around the world, and this is something we should certainly be praying for, but then also to the degree that we're called to, maybe we're called to get involved somehow.
And truth be told, and I know this comes up from time to time, people talk about this, I can look at my ancestors, I don't know about you, but I can look at my ancestors and know that there was a day when they left Luxembourg primarily because they needed opportunity. They were looking for
right.
something better.
Right.
They were migrants
right.
in the time frame that it affected them. Most of us in this country can probably trace our ancestors to that. Moment.
Well, ultimately, everybody who's in the Americas migrated. Our ancestors migrated here from somewhere.
Right.
For the Native Americans, probably through yeah. from Asia.
Yeah.
Ultimately, but yeah, from those of us whose ancestry is European.
Yeah.
Our forefathers, if you were, migrated from there at some point.
Yeah, it's just a matter of when.
Exactly.
Thousands yeah. and thousands of years ago, in the case of the Native Americans,
yep.
or in the last few hundred years.
Yep. Exactly.
Or today.
Still happening.
Those who are seeking opportunity.
Yep.
All right. Again, that happened. That actually happened earlier in January, National Migration Week. But I just didn't want to let it pass without some conversation about it.
You know, Jerry, I think this would apply to beyond the question of the immigration debate, certainly. But I think it's always valuable to really try to understand any issue from a variety of perspectives, too. Once you get the first principle in mind, really try to understand whatever side you take on the issue. I've got my position. But I think it's valuable, useful, especially because of the state of public discourse today,
yeah.
the poor state. Try to get inside the mind, the head of the person who disagrees with you. You might discover at least a little bit of their rationale, if nothing else.
And how else do we ever get to a point of compromise and actual progress on these issues
exactly.
if
yep.
we don't do that?
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah. All right.
Yep.
Well, appreciate that. Let's move on to the second one that I had in my mind, and that is a week of Christian unity.
Yep.
This is a topic I know you have a particular interest in, you've done some work in.
Yep.
And that week, actually, maybe it's already passed as well. Probably as people are hearing it.
It ends on the 25th, which is next week still.
Okay, yeah. So good.
I think it's the 18th to the 25th.
So here's one we can actually have in mind at the proper time.
Right. Yeah, so this is something that, this is the I think it frankly, like the ecumenical movement in general, the movement for unity among Christians, I'm pretty sure the week of Christian unity here in January predates Catholic involvement. But the Catholic Church has been involved now for several decades, going back to, I think, shortly after, right around the time of the Second Vatican Council, mm-hmm. way back in the 60s, where the Catholic Church joined at the Second Vatican Council the movement to try to unify. The church already is one. We say that every Sunday in the Creed, one holy Catholic apostolic church. But there are other Christians besides Catholics, obviously. We know that particularly well as Americans. So this is part of a call and especially prayer for unity, not just within the church, but unity among all Christians. For me, I think especially of St. Pope John Paul II, who wrote an encyclical letter, one of the highest level of church teachings, on the topic of Christian unity. And he reminded us that unity is first and foremost a gift of the Spirit. And therefore, this is the week, it's not the week of action for Christian unity. This is the week of prayer for Christian unity. So we really do need to be praying because it, frankly, Jerry, it bears poor witness to our attempts to evangelize the world. The fact that there's so much disunity among Christians mm-hmm. in general. Mm-hmm. And the Catholic Church has said, we as Catholics need to pray for and to various degrees work for unity with our brothers and sisters in Christ.
It would help me if you would spend a few minutes talking about what we mean by the word unity. Unity does not mean conformity in every instance, does it?
Not in every instance, not in every detail. So to me, the best example to illustrate, okay, in the Catholic Church, think of the different religious orders that we have. So in our diocese, we have Benedictines, we have Presentation Sisters, we have Carmelites, mm-hmm. We have priests and brothers of the Sacred Heart, and historically we've had others as well. So we have all these different, now all of those different religious orders within the Catholic Church, they have their own charism, they have their own shape to how they pray, they have the thing they emphasize on in terms of their mission, and yet they're unified around things like doctrine, around church structure. They all believe in the sacraments. They all believe in the content of the church's teaching, et cetera, et cetera. But there's a diversity within the unity of that.
Okay.
So similarly, when we're looking at, okay, and when we're trying to imagine what would it look like for all Christians to be united, there has to be unity in doctrine.
Okay.
And that's probably the biggest thing. Like, how do we overcome that? Like, Lutherans believe something different from Catholics, believe something different from Methodists, et cetera.
Not entirely. I mean, we all believe in Jesus Christ.
Right. 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 Right.
So there are some moments, some instances where we are already united.
Obviously, yeah, we're Christians commonly. So Jesus, God, aspects of Scripture, but there are those differences as well, and many of those doctrinal differences right now are the divide is too wide.
Mm-hmm.
And so there would have to be some greater degree of agreement on doctrine, but then there could still be within that, again, akin to religious orders, maybe a Lutheran way, a particular spin on prayer life, or an Anglican way of serving.
Might it, Chris, end up being something like we already have different rites? You know, so we have the Byzantine rite because of the ancient connection to a particular aspect of the faith that continues to this day, Maronite, and
yep.
and there's different ones, Syro-Malabar,
yeah.
and some of the others. Might it be something like that?
I think that's what many people, that's what I think it would be akin to,
okay.
is where there's unity, there's recognition of the authority of the Holy Father as the successor of St. Peter, general agreement on doctrine, but then, yeah, a wide variety of liturgical forms, prayer forms, that sort of thing.
And do you think... get into the mind of God here now for a second, if you don't mind, Chris. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, Jim, all right.
Does this have to happen before Christ comes again?
No.
Okay.
Would it be great? Yes. You know, the church, in many ways, the church was, there's been division from the very beginning,
right?
But there was pretty fundamental agreement, fundamental unity, I'd say, throughout the first millennium of the church's existence. The second millennium, at the very beginning, there's the Catholic Orthodox, the Eastern Orthodox divide,
right?
And then 16th century, of course, the Reformation. Many people are praying and hoping that the third millennium will be, so first millennium, unity, second millennium, disunity, maybe third millennium, reunion.
Mm-hmm.
Please God.
There's not a lot today that would suggest we're close to that I can see.
So interestingly, in some ways we're closer, in other ways we're farther apart. For me, my area of study was looking at the doctrine of justification, how we're made righteous before God, in the dialogue between Lutherans and Catholics. And in 1999, the Vatican and a Lutheran group signed a breakthrough agreement on that.
Okay.
So that's the original issue for the Reformation, Jerry. And the Vatican said that we can agree to what this document says. The problem is, in all sorts of other areas, we disagree more than we did in the 16th century.
And not to be, I got to be careful how I say this, but which Lutheran group? Because there are multiple, right?
Right. There are. Yeah. So just a quick story on that. Protestants celebrated, or in some cases merely commemorated, the 500th anniversary of the start of the Reformation in 2017, going back to 1517. And I was on South Dakota Public Radio with a couple of local in South Dakota Lutheran leaders.
Right.
And the host, before we went on air, was so, okay, trying to get the lay of the land. So now, and then she said to the two of them, so now what's the deal? Why are there two Lutheran groups? And they, we don't want to go there. So that's what, and I get it.
Yeah. So anyway, we've got some work to do. And the point again of this week, certainly we need to understand some of these things, but the point of this week is to pray for it.
Pray for it. Again, it's that unity is going to be a gift of the Spirit with which we cooperate. So pray first and then act as you are prompted.
Okay, very good. Helpful. I think that's helpful for people to have that in their mind. This is we're at it right now. So keep it in your prayers this week in particular. Probably always is a good thing to have it in your prayer.
Amen.
All right. My third one is the whole celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day. As Catholics, we don't, I think, necessarily think particularly about this as it's a national holiday. It's not a holy day. It's a national holiday. And yet, this whole topic of racism, obviously, which he dedicated his life towards resolving some of those issues, is still very prevalent, very prominent in our world these days.
Yep.
And so I think worth spending a little time talking about either about him and about his cause and about kind of where we are today.
Yeah, and the a couple things came immediately to my mind in terms of the heart of this, what this is about. So two things for me. You said Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. as well. Southern Baptist pastor,
right.
Preacher.
Right.
He was a Christian.
Yep.
And I think today. So having said that, then secondly, what is the issue with racism? Racism says that there are some people, because of what race they are, who don't have the same dignity as others. And Christianity, and really Judaism as well, it's because of Scripture that we have said for 2,000 years that it doesn't matter the color of your skin, it doesn't matter where your ancestors lived, every human person has the same fundamental dignity. So Martin Luther King was the civil rights movement, ultimately, and he was very explicit about this,
right.
Has biblical Christian, Jewish Christian roots and foundation. I think we have to keep that in mind because I think that's frankly been forgotten in many quarters today. The idea, Jerry, that you and I, because we're human persons, are equal in dignity, was mind-blowing in the ancient world when Christianity started to spread the biblical message because it's not obvious.
Right.
Like in some ways it's obvious today because we've been living it for 2,000 years, but it's much easier to see the differences between people than the fundamental dignity. You know, I am clearly better looking and more intelligent and kinder and more virtuous than you are. That's just obvious.
Well, you're younger.
Right.
I'll give you that one.
Kidding with all that, but you know what I mean? We can see the differences more easily.
Yeah.
And yet Martin Luther King was so rightly taken with proclaiming and working for the recognition of the equality of people regardless of skin pigmentation because he was a Christian Protestant pastor.
Right. That's where it came from. I mean, obviously it came from his lived experience
right.
as well.
Absolutely.
But how he talked about it, the way he preached was because of what he knew
right.
from the gospel.
I remember most famously for me, especially the Catholic side of this, his letter from the Birmingham jail, he quoted St. Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah.
He made the argument from natural law that St. Thomas Aquinas did. So, I think we have to keep that in mind. The reason I emphasize this today, Jerry, because I feel like sometimes the reality of where this idea came from has been lost, and then it can go all sorts of sideways and crooked and so on.
Well, I guess maybe my other motivation for spending some time talking about this today is, in a sense, to challenge myself and maybe challenge our listeners as well to reflect a bit. And I think this day is a great day to do that, about where in my life I might be living in a way that's not quite right in terms of my brothers and sisters
right.
who may look different than me,
right.
kind of to your point.
And that is so easy to do, you know, especially, and it doesn't matter, it's not a, well, in our case, it's a matter of white versus other minorities because so most are white. But if you go to other countries,
right.
you know, I have friends who have traveled to the Far East and they look, you know, obviously they're in the minority there.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what our abilities are, what our race is. We're all human beings with fundamental human dignity.
It kind of sums up our whole conversation today, just to remember the other person's human dignity.
Exactly.
And we cover a lot of ground with that.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
All right. Great to have this reflection with you, Dr. Chris Bergwell. Thanks so much for being with us this morning on Catholic Views.
You bet.
Gene, any other worthy news items we ought to mention this morning?
Pope Francis is always busy. He has advanced the sainthood causes of three women and recognized the martyrdom of 14 religious sisters who were killed during the Spanish Civil War. That's always a big deal.
More witnesses to the faith, and you can't go wrong with that.
Exactly.
We welcome that and thank those who went before us, who lived lives of heroic virtue, which I think is one of those words that they use that they lead towards sainthood.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's our time for Catholic Views this morning. Thanks for being with us each week. We hope you will be back with us again next Sunday.